on this episode of Baseball Barbacast, another massive Mets move as they have acquired Freddy Peralta from the Milwaukee Brewers in exchange for two top 100 prospects, Brandon Sproat and Jet Williams. We talk all about that trade, what to like from Milwaukee, what to be concerned about, and why the Mets offseason is finally starting to look pretty darn good. Then we talk about Cody Bellinger returning to the Yankees at long last. Was this a good deal for him and his agent, Scott Boras? The Scobo Scobor gets an update, of course. And it is the end of the week, so we give you the good, the bad, the ugly. All that and more on this episode of Baseball Barbacast.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that thinks Freddy Peralta should just go by Fred. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And while we have a bevy of Freddies, Major League Baseball is Fredless at this point in time. Maybe Peralta, upon joining the New York Mets, will start being a Fred.
This is a great point. This is definitely along the same lines of the Bob extinction that I have been tracking quite closely. Bob Seymour emerging in 2025 is our first MLB Bob in a long time. And as you mentioned, yeah, we got Freddie Freeman. We got Freddie Peralta, Freddie Fermin, Freddie Tarnock. Shout out Freddie Tarnock. But Fred, just scanning, it seems like maybe Fred Lewis, you know, Fred McGriff, of course, a big one. Like we've got Fred Lynn, some pretty big Freds in baseball history. But this would be a late switch here. I would embrace it. I think everybody would embrace it. And I think Freddie Peralta is the kind of guy that if he tells you something, I'm like, yeah, whatever, man. You say, if Freddie Peralta says something with a smile, I'll go with it. Because this guy is charismatic on and off the field. And that is going to be our opener because he has a new employer.
The best player traded this winter. Full stop. Freddie Peralta, the ace of the Milwaukee Brewers, no longer will be spending time in the great state of Wisconsin as the Brewers sent him to Queens in the New York Mets in a deal late Wednesday evening. Peralta and Tobias Myers, a starting pitcher, kind of a back-end type, who had a very good 2024, bad 2025, has tons of team control. Those two will be going to the Mets in exchange for a pair of high-level prospects. Jet Williams, a fire hydrant-shaped position player. Who is he, a center fielder? Is he a shortstop? Is he a second baseman? We will discuss. And Brandon Sproat, one of the three highly rated pitching prospects that the Mets brought up towards the end of last season. It is yet another example of the Milwaukee Brewers dealing away talented arms right before they reach free agency, which Peralta will do at the conclusion of this 2026 season. And it is the culmination of a week of activity for President of Baseball Operations David Stearns in New York, the Mets' Adbo Bichette. They trade for Luis Robert, and now they get their frontline guy, a true number one. Is he an ace? We can talk about what that definition means. He is someone that you feel good about starting game one of a playoff series.
Yeah, I mean, Freddie Peralta has been, you know, in our life for a while now, you know, pitching 8 years with the Brewers because he had signed an extension earlier on in his career. And part of his trade value being that extension was fairly team friendly. He's under contract for only $8 million in 2026. Does that matter to the Mets? Probably a little bit less. But as we've talked about a lot recently, every dollar when they're that far over the luxury tax does mean a little bit more. But you, when we were thinking, okay, it seems like Peralta is going to get traded. Anyone really, if they, you know, conjured up enough prospects, they probably could have been able to afford Freddie Peralta to be the ace of their staff or one of their best pitchers. But the Mets clearly had this need, and this was the need that had yet to be addressed for all the additions and subtractions that they had made over this busy winter. The rotation had yet to be touched whatsoever. All the chaos in the infield, the outfield, the bullpen, comings and goings. and you just looked at this group of pitchers, starting pitchers, and you said, okay, well, there's a lot of them, but how many of them do I feel really good about? Nolan McLean, one of the other young pitchers who we saw at the end of last season, who is still rookie eligible and has a very strong case as the best pitching prospect in baseball. Him and Trey Savage, of course, has a very different but compelling kind of case for that. Rookies, for sure. They are still eligible, and so as we will probably have some, you know, top 100 discourse coming up in a few weeks as those lists start to be released. But besides Nolan McLean, hilariously, it's a group that, because of just how either injured or uneven their seasons were in 2025, you just weren't feeling great about really any of them. Like, I don't know how you would have ranked the Mets rotation, not how they would have rolled them out, but from a confidence standpoint, let's just grant McLean. I know you're all in on McLean. A lot of people are all in on McLean. After McLean and before Peralta, what was your confidence level for the rest of the Mets starting pitchers in order?
I'm going to speed run this. Always been low on David Peterson.
Okay.
For years now. I think he's a sufficient number four.
All-star.
Number five.
Still there.
All-star. Sure. Christopher Sanchez, not an all-star. Runner-up Cy Young. Clay Holmes, capable. Clay Holmes going from closer to starter and being sufficient was unbelievably impressive, both from the Mets and from him. I don't think there is anything exhilarating or exciting about Clay Holmes, the starter. I would not feel ecstatic about starting him in a playoff game. Go ahead.
Yeah, the other thing you have to mention about Clay Holmes is it just got a lot worse as the season went on, right?
Like, it's almost like he clearly got tired.
Yeah, you can imagine, right? The innings increase was absurd. But early on, it was like, oh, man, they cooked with this one. And then it was like, okay, he's fine. He's okay.
Sean Manaea. Not as good as he was in 2024. Better than he showed in 2025. So The Athletic, every year, does a ranking of the aces where they ask people around the industry. And I find it to be a very helpful resource. Last year, Sean Manaea was ranked like two spots ahead of Freddie Peralta. Okay. That feels preposterous right now. Right. That's,
well, if we had touched on it a year ago, I hope we would have called that out as preposterous. But yeah.
Right. But at this point, like, you could see a world where Manaea pitches his way out of the rotation by May. Kodai Senga is nasty. There is not a starting pitcher in baseball I feel less confident in making 10 starts. than Kodai Senga. Okay. So this was just a pile of question marks. And I think it is fair where it's like, when you take this group and you throw it against a wall, some stuff's going to stick, right? I think that's fair. I feel good enough about the Mets pitching dev. The Mets pitching dev is not as good as it was being lauded for at the beginning of last season and not as bad as it was being criticized for at the end of it. The truth, as always, is somewhere in the middle. If you put Holmes, Peterson, Manaea, Senga in my hand and you threw him at the wall, like, one of these guys is going to be awful, one's going to get hurt, one's going to be competent, and one's going to be good, right? That's just like how this stuff works. Yep. That's not enough of a rotation with, you know, all things considered. I think Jonah Tong and his inconsistencies and his talent kind of falls in that group as well, where you could project a lot on him, but what is he at this point? And so in the end, they needed a guy like Freddie Peralta.
And they weren't shy about it, right? It's not like they were coming out here being like, we're confident in this group. They said, we need to go get a starting pitcher. The question was, would that be via free agency or would that be via trade? Looking at how flawed the pitchers were at the top of this free agent market, whether it's Fromber, still available as we're recording this, whether it's Dylan Cease, who got paid very fast, but of course has his own flaws, Ranger Suarez, we know. And we talked about his kind of pros and cons. And when you consider the Mets farm system, which is, of course, going to become a relevant character here, I always viewed trade as the most likely one. And I also always kind of viewed Freddie Peralta as the most obvious target.
So
certainly with the David Stearns connection, having already brought back Devin Williams, and just the fact that they lined up so well with what the Brewers were likely going to be targeting, which is major league ready pieces.
Let's talk about Freddie Peralta. Because when you pitch on the Brewers, and you don't win a Cy Young, and you don't play in the World Series, the world probably knows a little bit less about you. That's understandable. That's just how this goes. originally signed by the Mariners, traded away to the Brewers.
What? Wait, what?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I know.
In one of Jerry DePoto's worst trades, if not his worst trade, it was straight up for Adam Lind, I believe.
With two other prospects who did not really ever pan out. But when you trade away Freddie Peralta, that's going to hurt.
He did the thing that the Brewers do where they slow roll you. They do kind of a soft launch where it's like, hey, pitch a little bit in the bullpen. We'll see how it goes. Ba-da-da. Oh, you're in the rotation. Oh, you're the number three. Oh, we'll trade away the number one. You're the number one. And over time, he has gotten better and better and better. Last year, I believe he finished fifth in the Cy Young. He is really good because his fastball is in the mid-90s and has ride and deception. And his changeup is a pitch that he can throw to hitters of both handedness, right? It is a quality pitch that works against same-sided hitters. That means as a right-handed thrower, he can throw his changeup to right-handed hitters, which is not something a lot of pitchers do. I have in front of me a list of the best pitchers in the world. What I'm going to do, Jordan, is I'm going to say a name, and I want you to say if you would 100%, like no doubt in your mind, take them over Freddie Peralta in 2026. Okay?
Let's do it. This is good. I did not prepare for this, and I am ready to have strong opinions that I immediately regret.
I think there are four no-brainers, and that is Skubal Skeens, Christopher Sanchez, and Garrett Crochet.
Moving on. Yes.
Great. Logan Webb.
I'd rather have Logan Webb.
Me too. Yoshinobu Yamamoto.
I'd rather have Yamamoto.
Jesus Luzardo.
I'd rather have Freddie Peralta.
I think I would too. Zach Wheeler in his current predicament.
I can't evaluate Wheeler, but healthy Wheeler, yes. Wheeler for sure.
Okay. Max Fried.
Ooh, that's like right on the line. And I can't say 100%. I might, but I'm thinking about that one.
I'm high on Fried. I would 100% take Max Fried.
Okay.
Hunter Brown.
Ooh, that's like kind of a similar style and similar ascent. Hunter Brown also still might be getting better, whereas Freddie Peralta he also just posted his best season.
But it's not 100%.
Not 100% either way. That's really close. That's a close one.
I think that's probably it. The other candidates, Dylan Cease, Jacob DeGrom,
Mariners Joe Ryan. Have some decent pitchers. I don't know if you know about them.
Getting to them now, but would you take any of them 100% over Freddie Peralta?
No. Woo and Gilbert are on the right day, yes, but not 100%.
Fromber, Gossman, Glasnow, Snell, maybe. Snell's the one, but it's like, is he gonna make 10 regular season starts again? You know, so I think
Ohtani, doesn't he pitch?
I would not take Ohtani the pitcher over Freddie Peralta.
I mean, that's a fair take, but
it's probably we worth are thinking about it. About that. Yeah. So anyway, again, the no-brainers are Skubal Skeens, Sanchez, Crochet, Webb, Yamamoto. Those are the only ones where we're like, that's it, no doubt.
The takeaway is Freddie Peralta might be a top 10 pitcher in the world.
He might be.
Might not be. Might not be, but he might be.
Pitching volatile.
And that. And by the way, I mentioned before, you know, you referenced that the Aces project that had Manaea over Peralta, which again, I need to go back and look at. That, to be clear, is not a referendum on the Athletic editorial staff, as our pal Andy McCullough always points out. That is based on feedback from people who work in baseball.
In the game.
Scouts, GMs, whatever. In fairness to them, the season Sean Manaea was coming off of in 24, and the fact that Peralta, while he has essentially always been good, he's always striking guys out, the run prevention, because it lined up in the opposite way that it did for Dylan Cease this year, was, you know, a career best, 2.70 ERA, a career high 17 wins. All right. We love that for him. A career high 176 and 2/3 innings. So it all came together for Freddie Peralta in 2025. The strikeouts always been there.
And the way that he pitches,
yeah.
The way that he pitches, right? It's a lot of heaters at the top of the zone.
Mm-hmm.
When you live and die with that, your results can be a little bit more volatile year to year because how many runs you give up is just like dependent on if the fly balls you allow go over the fence. And so like, if you look at expected numbers, right? If you look at expected numbers, he's kind of been in a similar range pretty much his whole career. And then it just kind of fluctuates depending on how many bombs he's giving up. And last year was a very impressive season for him in terms of like preventing the long ball.
Yeah. And even before that, like he wasn't giving up 40 homers a season. It was 26 sure. each of the previous 2 years, which is high, but he's so rarely allowing hits of really any other kind of variety. Batting average against, he's consistently near the bottom. That's why with the whiff rate and the strikeout rate, it's like always there. So as we just said, his case to be a no doubt top 10 pitcher in the world is not flawless, but you catch him on the right day. And I would also say he still has a good amount to prove in the postseason, right? He does not have a signature playoff start to his name where it's like, that's Freddy Peralta. That has not happened yet in his career.
No.
Maybe he will have that opportunity with the Mets. Yeah.
Because of the way that the Brewers do business, I mean this in terms of in-game strategy, he doesn't really work that deep in games. Yep. Right. So like last year, he makes 33 starts and only gets to 176 and 2/3 innings. I would imagine that the Mets are a little bit more willing to like stretch that out, where I think if he makes 33 starts this year, that number is closer to 190. Whereas the Brewers are like, our bullpen is banging all the time. You know, if we bring in the hot dog kid, Chad Patrick, in the sixth, like that's an effective way to go about it.
That said, to your point, I just have it up now with the game log. How many times in 33 starts last year did Freddy Peralta appear in the seventh inning? You want to guess?
Oh, four or five.
Yeah, three.
Yeah.
He completed seven innings once. He had one outing of eight innings, which I think was like his first outing of the season or second outing of the season.
I mean, he walks a lot of guys,
it's six,
right?
And six, like, and he's done. But it's about the Brewers. It says less about Freddy Peralta. Not that he can't do it. We will find out if it is.
I disagree a little bit. I think I know I'm the one who brought it up, but like,
sure,
some of it's the Brewers, a lot of it's the Brewers, but some of it is that he's a guy with a 30th percentile walk rate, right? Like he walks a lot of people. Yep. And when you walk a lot of people, you have to throw more pitches because not only are you walking guys and facing more hitters, you're usually working deeper counts, mm-hmm. right? Is that something that the Mets try and change with an approach where he works more in the zone? Or are they like, hey, just throw your good six and we'll take it from here? That's something that I'm curious. And like, what Freddy Peralta, the pitcher, looks like with the Mets this year versus what Freddy Peralta, the pitcher, looked like the last couple of years with the Brewers is super compelling, because this is not a situation where Freddy Peralta is coming over from an organization that doesn't know what it's doing, right? Freddy Peralta is not going from the, you know, Rockies pitching dev to the Guardians pitching dev or whatever. Like, the Brewers and the Mets are both considered smart teams. The DNA of these organizations is very similar. David Stearns, president of baseball operations with the Mets in Milwaukee for a long time. Same with his assistant GM, Carlos Brizuela. Like, but what types of alterations, if any, the Mets make, I think will tell us something about the way they think about pitching. Yep. And as a huge nerd, I'm very compelled by that dynamic. Yep. Let's now talk about the Mets offseason, because maybe there's another big move coming. Does it really feel like it to me? Maybe they trade away a starter to simplify that mix. We'll see. I think, however, as a whole, we can zoom out and evaluate what is one of the most notable pivots, roster refreshes that I can remember over the winter and some time. Incomings. You want to just do it this way? Incomings this winter. Bo Bichette, Jorge Polanco, Marcus Semien, Luis Robert Jr., Freddy Peralta, Devin Williams. Mm-hmm. Luke Weaver.
Luis Garcia. They just signed
Tobias Myers.
Right. Let's not overlook that. The other thing, just quickly on Myers, is he was really good in relief last year. And we just talked about this depth chart. I could imagine them making him one of their bridge guys as much as anything, instead of having him be like a fifth starter.
He also has an option, which is not the case with many of the other Mets relievers who are kind of an older more experienced group. And then out the door, right? It's Alonzo. It's the whole crew. Alonzo, Diaz, McNeil, Nimmo. I mean, that's a lot of...
Marte.
I mean,
and that's, by the way, that's important too.
Winker.
Oh, Winker was on the team last year. But Winker, okay, Winker got 81 plate appearances. Marte got 329. So when you think about, you know, I'll do my annual piece before opening day of, and I can't wait to do it for the Mets, which is, you know, rate of return, which is looking at how, what percentage of plate appearances and innings pitched each team has still in the organization. I'm very excited to calculate it for the Mets. I imagine they will look like one of the more dramatic ones. Although on the mound, you know, it's, you've added Peralta. You've lost Diaz, but there's still a lot of other similar faces here. I guess Stanek is another one that's gone. Griffin Canning, someone who pitched a good amount of innings before he got injured. But for the most part, yes, it is going to be a drastically different group.
So,
and now it's Lindor and Soto, baby. And I guess Bo Bichette for the time being.
How would you evaluate it, though? Like, it's very interesting to contrast with the Yankees.
Mm-hmm. Well,
who took the exact opposite approach, right? Where it was like, all right, just put the song on repeat. Change nothing. The Mets changed a whole lot. Not just the roster, right? I mean, the coaching staff is almost entirely different under Mendoza. And I think that it is a worthwhile attempt. I don't think it can be analyzed. There's just so much change that I just need to see the results. Like, I need to spend some time and sink my teeth into all of this. Like, it is overwhelming, the differences. And I think that, but like the idea of it, like the decision to do it this way, that I'm fascinated by. Like, that to me is really hard to do. And I give David Stearns credit for having the chutzpah to go down that road.
Yeah. No, I think that's a fair assessment. Now let's turn our
attention. It's obviously easier to do when you could run a $350
million
deal.
Correct, as I was about to add. Yes, that is an important distinction, but you still have to have the, as you mentioned, the front office courage to plow ahead and get rid of all of the players who everyone has jerseys of. So that is a choice, but this was not a half measure. And we're going to talk about the Yankees here in a second. And we just had a run it back discourse conversation with the Phillies. As always, you have to consider what they would be running back. What just happened? The Phillies made it farther and had a much better season than the Yankees and the Mets.
People forget this. Phillies, I mean, this is maybe glass half full, couple bounces away from beating the Dodgers. Like, they lost game, remember, like, game two at the wheel play? Look, the game two at the wheel play, they win game three, Orion Kirkering game, like, the Phillies
couple
were not
bounces
outplayed.
Is generous. They put up a fight where it's like, if you said they found a way, there is a reality
closer
that
than the Brewers.
Exactly. There is a reality that you can, but not as close as the Blue Jays, right? And I'm not just talking about the fact that they were in the World Series, but they, you know.
No one's closer than the Blue Jays.
Blue Jays certainly put up a bigger fight.
It's about as close as you can get.
The Mets, we know, catastrophic, didn't even get to the tournament. And then the Yankees are somewhere in between, where they finished with the most wins in the American League, unfortunately tied with the Blue Jays, and then they got embarrassed in the first round. So I know they beat the Red Sox. Okay, that's nice.
Remember that home run, though? Aaron Judge hit off the plate.
Yes, well, we can talk about that. Well, we got Bellinger conversation coming up in a second. But I do think that in the Mets case, that was the kind of season that you would want to then shake it up. This is actually a good transition to the Milwaukee Brewers, who have once again traded one of their best pitchers, if not their best pitcher, for a Regis free agency for the fourth time in the last 5 years, following Josh Hader, following Corbin Burns, following Devin Williams, now Freddy Peralta is out the door. The Brewers just won the most games in baseball in the regular season. We know how their season
ended. Playoffs.
Playoffs was not awesome.
Just three wins.
And then I don't even know if you could say fewer than zero wins is what happened in the CS, but that's certainly what it felt like. Anyway, the Brewers, they are not shaking this up. They're not trading Freddy Peralta because, well, we got a chance. Like, no, this is how they operate. It is no surprise. And every time they do this, you are met with this confluence of feelings, especially as neutral observers and analysts. We're not Brewers fans, so it's not, we don't have the emotional attachment to all these guys. We just have to be like, well, that kind of sucks that they have to keep watching their favorite pitchers be traded. And yet, because they're good every season and because they have generally hit on these trades and acquired players that can be helpful for much longer, it's hard to be like, damn, they're doing it wrong. There's a lot that goes into it, and I do want to talk about the players involved here. But I'm not really sure what new I have to say about this Brewers strategy.
I mean, maybe it goes without saying, but I'm not like blaming general manager Matt Arnold. Maybe he's Pobo now. I lose track. Brewers head boy, top man, Matt Arnold. Because like when you're working within the confines of the system and your ownership group is unwilling to push the budget past a certain point, you need to make moves that benefit the long-term vision of the organization. As jargony as that sounds, like that is true. Those restrictions, like the GM of these teams with cheap owners, they're not waking up being like, man, I can't wait to save my boss some money today. Like, no, they want to have more financial juice to operate with, and they just don't. And so they have to work within those boundaries. And I think that the Brewers do a good job of that, all things considered. And I would imagine the fan base is a little torn because on one hand, there's no franchise in baseball I would trust more to pull off a trade like this than the Brewers because they've done it. Of those four trades that they've made, they're 3 for 4. I feel right. Like the Burns
it's still
one
too early for some of them, but yeah, I mean, they're
the Durbin one is already a win.
Yes. Like, yes.
Durbin and Nestor for Devin Williams. Like that's already a win, whatever. I trust the Brewers to do this right. However, if you're a fan, it's like, okay, does this heighten the likelihood that we're going to win the World Series next year, the year after? Or does it just heighten the likelihood that we're going to win 92 games and get into the tournament? I don't know. Is getting into the tournament enough? What does it take to win? This is just the whole story of running a baseball team, I think, is like, do we really know what wins in October? Like, do we know? Or
well,
is it just
that.
A roulette wheel? Right.
It's
but like
that.
You watch the 2025 Brewers and I'm like, that team can't win a World Series. They can't hit, you know?
So it's that. And I'm used to these conversations in Cleveland too. You have to credit particularly the front office to find ways to be competitive every season and have their fans not bottom out, even though they have these low payrolls. That is what generally Cleveland and Milwaukee has done as well as anybody, and Tampa for a long time before the last couple of years. But if you're still thinking about the ultimate prize, while I agree, it's hard to say that we know what wins in October. It also still feels like trading away the you know, ace level pitchers who really show up then is not the way to do it, but they are making the decisions that they have to, that they feel that they have
I think it's really interesting that the Brewers did not trade away Willy Adames when he was a year away from free agency. And I think that tells us something. It tells us that they feel confident in their ability to prevent runs. And I agree with that. When you watch the Brewers, even when they got Molly whopped in October.
Yeah, right? That's not why they lost.
I'd be like, they could throw Jordan's Grandpa Norm out there and he'd go an inning and a third, allow a base runner with a couple of zeros on the scoreboard, right? Like, they're going to find outs. They are not going to find, and they have not found runs. And so they still have not solved that piece of the puzzle, right? No. Jackson Churio maybe turning into a dude
and
change
great.
The dynamic. That'd be awesome. And, you know, maybe he does. But I think that it is instructive, right? I think it is instructive that they do this with pitchers and they don't do this with hitters. It shows us what they think they're good at and they know they're good at, and that's preventing runs.
Absolutely. All right. Let's talk about these players and then we'll take a break. Let's open it up. We haven't done this that much this offseason. Come on in, Jake, and join me.
Yeah.
In Jordan's prospect hut.
Is it warm in there? Because it's not warm here.
I hope so. You are. I was going to say, we are already anticipating some nasty weather, as I'm sure you are too, even down there in DC. But we're heading towards -5 degrees this weekend here in OHIO. So looking forward to that. But we are going to stay warm here.
The Prospect Hut is a balmy 81.
This is the place to get cozy and learn about Brandon Sproat and Jett Williams. And I am so interested in this duo because, for Sproat in particular, this is, and I'm going to caveat this by saying, if you're a member of the Sproat family, none of this is personal, what I'm about to say. But I want to be honest here. Wow. I want to be really transparent about my Brandon Sproat experience, okay? Because this is, no, seriously, I think this is my experience in the last 12 hours being online and watching very smart people freak out about Brandon Sproat. This is my experience. So I'm going to be honest. If you put a microphone in front of me, I'm not coming here to pull punches here, right?
Sproat family. Put on NPR or something. Like,
No. You stick with me. Let's work through this together.
Handle the truth.
So Brandon Sproat, because it's very easy to understand why this is exactly what the Brewers should be targeting. He throws really hard. He has multiple fastballs. He has multiple breaking balls. He's, you know, workhorse build. Like, this is the kind of pitcher I want the Brewers to work with. That is indisputable. And why I'm probably going to end up looking like an idiot. So we'll start there. Let's just put me right there. That said, as someone who follows amateur baseball and just tracks these prospects, I've just watched Brandon Sproat now for so long, and it's just, I don't know what it is. It's not for me. I watched him at Florida, and he was throwing really hard then, and I know the SEC is difficult, and there are really good players in there, and I think one of the sequences that happened with him where he went to Florida, and he was, you know, he moved from the bullpen to the rotation, and his junior year, it was like, all right, like, I see this stuff. It's great. Why isn't this turning into more strikeouts, more outs? And then the Mets took him in the third round. And he was like, no, that I can do better. I can go back and I can improve my draft stock. And technically he did that because he went in the second round the next year, also by the Mets in very hilarious fashion. But I watched another season of him, 19 starts with the Gators, you know, 4.66 ERA. And I was just like, okay, when is this going to like turn into something? When are we going to start dominating? And then he goes into the minors and it's pretty good. His first year at pro ball. And I'm just wanting more and more and more. And I still felt the same way last year. And so I'm excited for Brandon Sproat to go now. But again, you mentioned the Mets are renowned. They're like, they know what they're doing. They can help Brandon Sproat turn into this beast of a pitcher. And clearly he was valuable enough to be a headliner in this trade. And I want to see the Brewers make this happen. Because for how hard he throws and for how many pitches he throws, I've always just watched and I've been like, I'm not seeing it quite yet. So the Brewers have a lot of time to figure it out. He's very talented. Yeah. He still throws very hard. It's just, I can't, not
Does he
there.
Get outs?
I, yes.
Does he get outs?
Does he get outs? He's getting outs. I'm not seeing it. When I look at pitching prospects do we trust any of them? No. But he's just one where even though a lot of the components look great, whether it's on the pitch plot or on the Savant page, I have now watched him for 4 years, still wanting more and more and more. Listen, we say the same thing about Shane Baz, about Edward Cabrera. So this is not, it's not fair to put this on Brandon Sproat. I guess for me right now, I still need to see more to feel like he's definitely going to be an anchor of this rotation. I'd love to be wrong. The Brewers are likely to make me wrong. Jett Williams, meanwhile, is a different trajectory because I loved Jett Williams in the draft. I was like, I don't know what this is, but this is fun. This dude is this 5'7" firecracker from Texas who has power, has speed, is a tremendous athlete, and his name is Jett Williams. What's not to love? This guy is going to be everyone's favorite player. And as he's gone up the Mets system, it's not that I like him that much less. I'm just kind of like, and this has been a big part of my experience evaluating the draft and evaluating amateurs, is what is this? What kind of player are you? It's not that I need a comp, but I'm trying to understand how this manifests in being an everyday player. And honestly, I was thinking about this too with Luis Angel Acuña, right? Another very small, athletic, right-handed player where there's a lot, when you watch it, it's good. It's like, this is really exciting. But then you look at the stat line and you look at the shortcomings and you just are trying to say, what is this going to become? And with Jett Williams, I'm much more confident that he can be a regular than Acuña because of his on-base ability, the walks, the contact skills. I think that's there. But because we still don't know if he's a shortstop, we still don't know if he's a center fielder, if he's good at either specifically, he does have a good arm. He did have a big home run spike last year, but is that indicative of like an increase in raw power, or was it just an approach where he was trying to pull the ball over the wall? Is that going to work in the big leagues when you're Jett Williams sized? So he has a lot of questions to answer also, but I'm more excited to find out that one and to see where the Brewers find out what they think about him, because maybe what's most interesting about Jett Williams, when you look and consider that he is probably almost big league ready, I'm not saying he's going to make the team out of camp. That would surprise me. When you look at the Brewers depth chart, where does he fit in? Is this someone Short that they stop. Think could be better than Joey Ortiz? That's going to be very interesting. If so, him and Caleb Durbin is going to be one of the shortest left sides of the infield in 100 years.
This is great news for Caleb Durbin, because what this means is, with Jett Williams in town, the two of them can stand on each other's shoulders underneath a trench coat and get into bars, right? And that's a game changer. They can go get a beer now. Vincent Love adult that. Man style.
Yeah. Vince. Yeah. Shout out to Vince. So Jett Williams, I'm fascinated as the Brewers continue to collect small players, but I don't know. They're both top 100 prospects. I get why. They are at the upper levels, and this is what the Brewers have targeted, guys that can help right away. Is Brandon Sproat going to be in the rotation right away? I haven't contemplated that quite yet. I don't think he has to. So, you know, they have Woodruff is back. Mizorowski is of course a huge question mark in a good way. Quinn Priester, our guy, Chad Patrick, Logan Henderson. They have some other, Robert Gasser if he's healthy. So they have other options. So there's, you know, they don't have to just throw Brandon Sproat and be like, you're our three starter right now. But it'll be really interesting to see how much we see both of these guys in 2026, because part of what has helped these other trades is that these guys have contributed immediately. Whether that's Durbin, whether that's Joey Ortiz the first year, the optics are better when the players you got in return are helping immediately. You're not watching them languish in the minors while Freddy Peralta is dominating on another team. Not that the Brewers are solely focused on PR here, but it is part of the perception of these trades that I think is going to be impacted by how much Jett Williams and Brandon Sproat help in 2026. Anyway, thanks for joining me in my prospect hut. Now, we're going to take a break. And when we return, Cody Bellinger.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Our great national stare down is officially over. The end result is what the world expected. Cody Bellinger in pinstripes. The bleary-eyed, limbed-out former MVP, 2019 with the Dodgers, was dealt to the Yankees last winter from the Chicago Cubs in what was effectively a salary dump for Cody Poteet. Bellinger then produced his most complete season in years, finishing second on the New York Yankees in Baseball Reference wins above replacement, hit the market, was looking for like a 6-7 year deal, didn't get it. And in the end, he returns to the Yankees on a 5-year, $162.5 million contract with opt-outs after years 2 and 3. This is the opposite to the Mets. Cody Bellinger is the final piece of a puzzle the Yankees have already completed. But doing a puzzle you've already done is better than no puzzle at all.
Yes, the puzzle was completed. And then, like, I don't know, maybe like your cat jumped up on the table and kind of messed some pieces up, but not like knocked the whole puzzle off the table, but just messed some stuff up. And then it was like, oh, okay, let me just put it back together. And then, okay, well, we're good. We like this. The Yankees have added one player from outside the organization. I guess two. Shouts out Cade Winquist, Rule 5 pick. Added Ryan Weathers. But otherwise, essentially everybody that was a main character last season, except for Paul Goldschmidt and I guess DJ LeMahieu, who did appear in 45 games, is now back for better or for worse. We will talk about the contract in a second with our Scobo update, but strictly focusing on the field, the reason to applaud the Yankees for this is that they had the best outfield in baseball last year. Aaron Judge, of course, is a big part of that, but Cody Bellinger was an enormous part of that, as was Trent Grisham, who was also back via the qualifying offer. I think that the fear for Yankees fans, and our producer Andrew Hartz can confirm this when we are done with this segment, is that Cody Bellinger is a player that you feel like you need and you believe can keep doing this. Whereas Trent Grisham, there is a level of concern that there could be some amount of regression from the season that he just had. And thus, if we're thinking about keeping this outfield as elite, Cody Bellinger was a more important retention than Trent Grisham. But now you have both, and now you have an outfield that still should be very, very, very good. There are still questions beyond that with the likes of Jason Dominguez and Spencer Jones. But again, the Yankees should not be concerned about that because they need the best baseball players that they can get right now. And Cody Bellinger was clearly that. And now they have locked him in to be a long-term Yankee, which I think is pretty cool. I mean, Bellinger earned that. It's a hell of a journey for Cody Bellinger to get to this kind of long-term payday, as you sort of laid out. But it's even more than that when you go back farther and how it ended with the Dodgers and all those things. But Bellinger has been a main character in our experience for a while. We have joked for a while about the quote-unquote Bellinger zone because Cody Bellinger was born in between me and Jake in 1995. So anyone born in that six-month period is referred to as being born in the Bellinger zone. So we have grown up with Cody Bellinger, you know, at the same time as one of the patron saints of 1995 babies playing Major League Baseball. And now he's just going to kind of ride it out with the New York Yankees.
Yeah. So I think, I mean, this is a case with every player. And if you listen to us, you know that like going through a player's story and their background and their trajectory is really important in evaluating what they're going to do moving forward. And maybe that is like super duh, but I for Bellinger, it's so relevant because this was one of the best players in the world at one point. He won the MVP in the National League in 2019. He had a 167 OPS plus, he hit 47 home runs, OPS over, like he was incredible, right? Then it all fell off a cliff. Whether that was because he eviscerated his shoulder celebrating a home run in the playoffs with Kike Hernandez in 2020 or because he forgot how to hit, whatever, it doesn't really matter, right? Like, he got monstarred. He got space jammed. The talent evaporated. The results, gone. The production, poof. And then he rebuilt himself, right? He figured it out. He adjusted, he evolved, he changed his approach, he changed himself, his whole identity, right? Like, he was non-tendered. The Dodgers said, we could have you on our baseball team. We are choosing not to do that, right? And his ability to make it work gives me more confidence moving forward that he will figure out how to make it work, if that makes sense, right? If you come back from the ashes once, I feel good about you potentially being able to do it again. Now, that's all dependent on how his body ages, et cetera, et cetera. It's not that simple. But at least for me, like, would I give Bellinger 7 years? No. I'd give him 5, 100%. And I think this is a deal that makes a lot of sense for the Yankees. And like, look, it worked. We have evidence that he works in that park, in that lineup, in that city. And as potentially underwhelming it is to simply just copy and paste a full team with a worse bullpen year over year, that's not Bellinger's fault, right? That's not Bellinger's problem. And he fits with this team. And this is a good thing for the Yankees.
Yeah, 100%. But it is so true that it is, it's one of the most wild trajectories ever. I think the two things about that early part of his career, one, he came up when the ball was flying. And that does not take away from the seasons that he had, but it is hard not to look at the home run totals that he had when, as I mentioned, the ball was flying from 2017 to 2019. And that is when he really came on the scene. But yeah, to go from 8.7 WAR to negative 1.6 in 2 years is probably unprecedented, I would imagine. And then to build himself back up, which shouldn't be surprising because clearly this is an incredibly talented baseball player. But to reinvent himself in that way, I think has been very impressive. And I think that the versatility that he brings because of the defense at multiple positions and the style of hitter that he is, that's why I think the Yankees felt like they needed to have him. As for the negotiation, we can get to that in a second. But yeah, I think the Yankees now, the question is just, is there another, if there's one more Yankees move forward, what do you think it is? I don't know if you've thought about that. I mean, is there another starting pitcher that they would try to get? They seem to be very confident that by the time Cole and Rodon are back and Clark Schmidt, whatever, this, yeah, you could certainly, if you are super optimistic about pitcher arm health and, you know, which again, I don't know why anybody would be at this point. Yeah, you can look at this Yankees rotation in August and be like, damn, watch out. Especially if, you know, the Schlittlers and so on are continuing to move forward. Heel looks more like he did as a rookie. Lots to be excited about.
The bullpen is the problem.
The bullpen is like, what is this what we're rolling with? You know, they did that shopping. I just mentioned this with the Phillies and Yoan Duran.
Absolutely.
They did just get Bednar and Doval. Those were 2026 additions. Yes, of course, they would have hoped that they would have helped more down the stretch, and Bednar mostly did. Doval, you know, there.
Bednar did.
Bednar was great.
Huge win. Doval, so a little weird.
Maybe we feel just as good about him going into this year. But those, and Cruz too, by the way. Fernando Cruz, we should also mention, right? They were thinking about this year. So that you can consider that. You can consider those faces, and that's true.
Sure, but the team that they brought into the playoffs that didn't win a World Series also had Luke Weaver, who admittedly wasn't at his best.
Yeah.
And Devin Williams, who was good for them down the stretch. And like, I just don't think this is a bullpen as currently constructed that can win a World Series. Now, perhaps they go out and make moves at the deadline to fix that if they need to. I trust this pitching development group's ability. Like, everybody and their, you know, cousin thinks that Paul Blackburn's like the next Luke Weaver. Well, he might just be Paul Blackburn. You know. Oh, yeah.
All right.
There's like a weird amount of Blackburn.
All right. Blackburn hive fire. If you're listening, let us know. But we'll see.
Like, OK, if Cole, Rodon and Schmidt all come back, you have 8 starters.
Mm-hmm.
So you just put Weathers in the pen and be like, go throw 106. Sure. Or, you know, I think they probably should put Luis Heel in the bullpen.
Yeah. I don't know if it's too late already to do that. I'm honestly still more focused on the left side of the infield. And what are you getting from Ryan McMahon? Is it better than what you were getting third base before you got Ryan McMahon? Probably. But is he...
I think the Ryan McMahon, Ahmed Rosario third base platoon is
going to be just fine.
Be fine.
Okay, that's fine. And again, you think about what's going to be different. You're saying Ben Rice, you're the first baseman. And you're going to face lefties. You're going to hit the middle of the lineup. So... And then what happens when Giancarlo has his annual injury, right? Who's getting those at-bats? This is where the offense, and maybe this is where the Dominguez, Spencer Jones parts come in. That's where I'm still looking at, great, you've recreated the outfield. Maybe the outfield is just as good as it was. I look beyond that and I'm still like, okay, all right, we'll see how good this lineup is.
I kind of disagree. This is the best lineup in the league last year.
Yeah.
This is the best offense. Like, they led baseball in like most offensive categories. Yeah. And if... Well, okay, so
Judge,
what?
That'll help.
Yeah,
you have a single.
But guess what? He's still on the team.
Still on the team. Why not? I know.
Like, I would take the under. Yeah. I would take the under on most. I would take the under on Grisham. I would take the under on Judge because I'm taking the under on every player that puts up 9.7 wins. Maybe that's mm-hmm. unfair.
No.
That's fair. I would even take the under on Bellinger, but like I'm taking the over on Wells, who didn't hit it all last year.
Okay. So big, very important. Very important.
You know, I'll take the over on Giancarlo, 77 games. I'll take the over.
Ooh.
You know?
Okay. As long as he's not playing
tennis.
I don't know why you would take the over on that, but
you want to do that right now?
I hope he what makes you think he's gonna play 70? Like I hope so. I hope so. I would never be happier to be more wrong.
What makes me believe that he's gonna play more than 77 games is that he played more than 77 the previous four seasons.
Okay.
That's a low number, brother.
It is. It is. 36.
Here, let's
77.
Throw up some
that's fine. I hope
put some money where your mouth is, man.
All right. We'll figure out a wager there. All right, let's talk about Scott Boras before we take a break.
Here you go. Loser has to build a snowman next winter. Full snowman. Okay?
Deal. Deal.
In their respective I don't really have a yard, but snowman. That's fine. You gotta make it work.
If he plays less than 77, you can come here. I got plenty of space. Starting in 2026. I got plenty of snow and yard for you to build a snowman in.
Great. I'll come over and build a snowman at your place. Okay. 2026 wager doc. Number
Looking
one.
Forward to it.
Giancarlo Stanton over under 77 games played. I'll give you 77.5. Okay.
Thanks.
Loser builds a snowman.
Please be right. Please be, please. Oh, okay. Producer Andrew Hartz, Yankees fan, has messaged us that hard over. All in. Okay, great. Hope I'm wrong. All right. It's time for the Scobo. How did Scott Boras do with his final top client? Zach Gallen will still grade him on whenever he signs. But let's talk about this deal. 5 years, 162.5, no deferrals. Heavily front-loaded before two opt-outs after the second and third seasons that get pushed back if the 2027 season gets canceled. Can't remember ever seeing a clause like that in a contract, but, you know,
sure.
Leave it to the Boras Corp for putting that in there. That's about the work stoppage, if you're unfamiliar. Huh? Anyway, this
I'd
is
love
interesting.
To stop working.
This is interesting. Is this a win? Is this a draw? Is this a loss? I think that it is hard to call it a win.
I think it's hard to call it a win, and I think it's hard to call it a loss. So I think it's a draw.
I think this is a draw because the quality of the deal here, particularly with how front-loaded it is, the fact that it does still seem like once he realized that the Yankees weren't going past 5 years, he could still kind of squeeze a little bit more out of it.
He got everything else. He got the opt-outs. He got the no trade. Like, he got the signing, like, all that stuff.
And the fact that he was kind of bidding against who, right?
Nobody.
Who were the Yankees really bidding against? It was unclear from the beginning. Yes, when Tucker was still out there and so-and-so, Blue Jays, maybe Mets, maybe they were interested. But this felt like the Yankees were kind of just inching forward all along. That's still worth something. That said, for how long this got drug out, to have to hear that he wanted 7 years for weeks and weeks and weeks and to still end up with five, we're just frankly annoyed. So because of that, we are not giving Scott Boras a win, but it is not a loss because this is a pretty good deal. So we give Boras a draw, which brings him on the season to 15-5-10, I believe. Unless that is not fully updated, but we will make sure that that scoreboard is correct. The Scobo rolls on. We're going to take a break when we return. It's Thursday, but we can't wait. It's the good, the bad, the ugly.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Let's get right into it. The good, the bad, and the ugly. One thing good, one thing bad, and one thing offbeat, chunky. You know what is Dan Ugla from this week? Is Jet Williams. Just like physically.
He ain't that thick. And Dan Uggla wasn't that short. If Dan Uggla was stealing 30 bags a year like Jet Williams might, he would maybe be in the Hall of Fame.
Jet Williams, though, is Uggla. Like, a player like that is Uggla.
Yes, yes. That's 100%. 100%. All right, you go good, first. What's good for me? What's good for me? All right, let's stick with the Brewers.
This is funny.
Quinn Priester, our man. Quinn Priester.
Who?
Quinn Priester.
Quinn Priester.
Quinn Priester. He's still on the Brewers. Maybe if he pitches well enough, he could get traded by the Brewers 1 year before free agency.
A dream.
But for now, he is on. I've already been traded twice.
What do you want to be when you grow up? Traded by the Brewers a year before free agency.
That means you're pretty good.
Yeah.
There is a, I guess, Brewers fan account that tweeted, this is BrewPack8. Not familiar with this account, but it seems like he's got a lot of followers. He tweeted, just went on a first date, and she didn't know who Quinn Priester was. Now let's pause here. Did this really happen? Is this just a funny tweet? I don't know. I don't really care. But it's funny. It's great. Got a lot of likes, although I don't know how many likes it got before what just happened. What happened is what I'm going to talk about, which is Quinn Priester, who was not tagged in this post, but I don't know, maybe he follows BrewPack8. He responded.
Someone said it to him. Someone said it to him.
Someone said it to him. Quinn Priester responded to this tweet and said, there's plenty of fish in the sea, .. As if to say, she ain't for you. You better know who Quinn Priester is.
She's a 10, but she doesn't know who Quinn Priester is. Come on now.
Which is beautiful. So shouts out Quinn Priester, our guy.
Quinn Priester. It's okay if it's good. Your significant other doesn't know baseball players.
Yeah, no. Jake's doing just fine.
I'm, you know.
More than fine.
My wife asked me if Mike Trout was still playing recently.
But here's the thing.
Fair.
Quinn Priester is in that bucket of like, we're yelling his name so often that she might have.
No.
No. Okay.
Absolutely no chance. All
right.
No, not even remote. No way. Like,
okay.
No.
Well, as I just said, Quinn Priester can aspire to be traded by the Brewers 1 year before free agency. I hope he can. He should also aspire to pitch well enough to have your wife know who he is.
Yeah. I'll take the under. All right. What's good for me? Aaron Nola, WBC, Team Italy. I mean, awesome. Great. Not a guy who in my head I had ever thought about as like Italian, to be honest with you. Maybe that is racism on my part. Part of that is, I guess, he's from Louisiana.
Yes.
And like, I just assume that all the Italian players are from the Northeast.
Yep. Nope.
At no point had I heard about him or his brother like being involved with Team Italy. Nola is not like, you know, it's not like Nola Tozzi, you know? And so this kind of caught me by surprise and off guard, but it's great. It's great for two reasons. One, Team Italy is awesome as a concept because it is half, like there are Italian players on Team Italy. It is not just Vinny Pasquantino and whoever responds to his text messages, right? Like,
it's not, there not is that.
It's not that, okay? But it is that, too, okay? And so for Nola to, like, opt in, and he'll start the first game, right? Like, he's got to be the best pitcher on this roster. That's awesome. The other reason I love it is because Aaron Nola, before last year, when I believe he took a comebacker off his foot and missed some time, was effectively, like, the most durable pitcher of the decade, right? Only threw 94 innings last year, only made 17 starts. And so coming off that year, the fewest innings he's thrown in a full season since his rookie year in 2015. He's like, I got to throw more, man. Like, I got bullets. Like, I got innings to cover. Give me the rock.
It is good. I think this is also making me very excited about Team Italy because one of the big differences in the tournament this year is that Team Italy is playing in America for pool play. Last year, they had to go. It's
probably part of why Aaron Nola is willing to go. Having talked to Vinny about this, when you're doing the group stage in Taiwan, it makes it way harder to get big leaguers to commit.
Exactly.
Because they don't want to fly to Taiwan.
And so while I know Vinny's recruiting efforts to get Roman Anthony to play failed, I do think that we could see a lot more big leaguers, you know, surprise Italians like Aaron Nola apparently is, participate because the pool play is in Texas instead of in Taiwan. So I'm very curious to see.
I also believe the Phillies are the early leader in the clubhouse for most WBC players.
The Harper, Mariners are going to be tough to top, but sure.
Harper, Schwarber, Keller, USA.
Kellers, yep.
Stubbs, Israel. Walker, mm-hmm. Taiwan Walker, Mexico. Alan Rangel, who I think is on the 40-man, also Mexico. Jose Alvarado, Venezuela. And Mundo Sosa, Panama. And then Johan Rojas, DR.
Is Rojas definitely playing?
I think they're putting him on the roster.
He's going to be like the defensive replacement in the outfield. I know the Mariners have like a million guys going, but we will see. But let's see how Team Italy comes together. See who Vinny can get to get. It's not all on him, but it's mostly all on him.
Not
all on him. All right, let's go to bad. My bad this week is an interesting sequence of reporting. Now, I want to respect the process here and recognize that everyone is trying to do this job as best they can. And so I'm not even really wanting to blame those who were reporting. People. However, what do you say?
I said most people are trying to do the best they can.
No, yeah, for sure. However, as someone who pays way too close attention to kind of the niche elements of how news gets reported, whether it's Jeff Passan going all caps breaking, whether it's who's getting the scoops from which teams and which agents, whatever. After Bo Bichette signed, I saw a very strange pattern on the timeline of increasingly or shockingly similar sentiments that appeared to have been copy and pasted from the same text message from whatever the source was. And it made me laugh. John Heyman tweeted that $42 million non-deferred is a big number, but Mets saw the Bichette opportunity this way. Number one, rare to get premium player on short-term deal. Number two, right-handed hitter continues balancing lineup. Number three, elite clubhouse presence and competitor, exactly the type of guy they want on the team. And then not long after that, Steve Gelbs posted from a Mets official on Bichette. Very rare to be able to get premium player like this on short-term deal. Right-handed hitter continues to balance lineup. Elite clubhouse presence and competitor, exactly the type of guy we want on our team. I know that probably this is how this works. We aren't necessarily always handling it this way. By the way, the exactly type of player we got on our team was also appeared in the story on The Athletic. I don't know exactly how this happens. And maybe this belongs in UGLA because I think it's very funny that whoever's, of course, the Mets official, whoever that is presumably just saying the same thing. But I don't know. I don't even know if this is more bad than UGLA, but it made me laugh. So I'm including it on the podcast.
The Mets official should just change the wording for different people. Now, maybe that's too much work and you know, they got no, things to
or,
do.
You're right. Or we should change the wording as reporters.
But like, no, but like Steve Gels is saying from Mets official. Like,
right.
That's it's good. Not rewording the words. It's like,
yeah,
whatever.
So I don't know. I just, when I saw that, and by the way, this probably happens more often than we realize, but when it's like verbatim from multiple different sources, I had to laugh and call it bad. So that's what I'm doing. What's bad for you?
The timing of the Freddie Peralta trade. This is a tweet from Kurt Hogg, who covers the Milwaukee Brewers at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Quote, Matt Arnold was David Stearns' assistant GM when the two of them traded for a 19-year-old Freddie Peralta in 2015. Tonight, 11 years later, he traded Peralta to Stearns. On Stearns' wedding anniversary, Arnold, quote, I think I might have ruined his anniversary dinner.
Okay, so
funny, right? Funny. And maybe David Stearns had a lovely anniversary or anniversary dinner. Why, though, did this deal need to get done last night? Maybe it is preposterous for me to say to David Stearns that he needs to adopt more of a work-life balance. I think people who want a work-life balance don't become the presidents of baseball operations for Major League Baseball teams, particularly the Mets. But like, was Baltimore going to swoop in for Peralta before the morning? Feels like talks were pretty far down the road, maybe. Maybe the work itself wasn't done during the anniversary. However, the idea that Arnold's saying, I think I ruined his anniversary dinner. Could we not just do this earlier or the day later? I'm David Stearns' wife, like, I'm not. I understand that this is part of the deal. The deals are part of the deal. But it's like, why can't it happen the next day, right? Like, you see what I'm saying? What are the mechanisms behind the scenes where it's, can Stearns, especially with Arnold, can Stearns just text Arnold and be like, hey, dude, anniversary tonight. Can we just finish this up tomorrow?
That's the thing.
Arnold would be like, I got you. Offer's on ice. Not talking to anybody else. Enjoy your dinner.
Hey, but that's not, if you're trying to make sure you're getting the best trade, you it's like, no, man, I ain't waiting for tomorrow. You might wake up and realize how much you love Jet Williams. And then deal's off. His wife might be convincing him to keep Brandon Sproat. You can't have that happen. You got to get this done. I agree, though. Particularly for Pete. And, right, presumably Matt Arnold knew this date, right? This
clearly.
Is not some it's not like they finished. I know, but it's not like they finished the trade. And then David Stearns was like, all right, good doing business with you, Matt. Oh, by the way, you ruined my anniversary dinner. And then Matt's like, ooh, whoops.
Ooh.
Like, that might have happened if he was negotiating with someone that he didn't used to work with. Anyway, I think that is bad. Also, Ugla. Speaking of Ugla and bad, actually, you go first here. Because this was almost my bad, but you were going to use it for Ugla. So go ahead.
Ha-Sung Kim fell on some ice.
And?
Is out.
I mean, I've fallen on ice like, plenty of times, but it was not this high stakes.
Ha-Sung Kim, who the Braves signed to a one-year $20 million deal like 2 weeks ago to be their everyday shortstop, an amount that we were surprised by somewhat in its size. He was in Korea, where he's from, and he slipped and fell on some ice and tore a tendon in his right middle finger and is expected to be out for 4 to 5 months. That's really bad.
Ha-Sung Kim will now have a second consecutive season making a ton of money and not playing a lot of baseball. Not his fault, but I mean, I guess don't slip on the ice.
I would argue this is more his fault than like 98% of injuries, probably.
Yeah, certainly more than the torn labrum that he was coming back from last year.
Yeah, like if a player gets hit on the elbow by a pitch or, you know, tweaks a hammy running, you're like, well, that's part of the job. Like, that's workers' comp. But him tearing, unless he, like, you know, was diving in front of a city bus to save a grandmother or, like, you know, he deserves, I mean, not deserves blame. Like, I'm not saying like Ha-Sung Kim, you're stupid. Like, what do you do? But it's like, compared to the average baseball injury, like, you can't be doing that, man. Falling on ice.
It's a tough one. It's a tough one.
You're an athlete. You also say, I remember I can't remember the last time I fell on ice, knock on wood.
Oh, now it's happening this weekend for sure. I think now what is so interesting, we were shocked that Boris was able to get $20 million for Kim, even on 1 year, after playing 48 games last year and having a 83 OPS plus. He had a player option, right, that he declined, assuming he would get. And we were like, okay, if you say so. Goes right back to the Braves. Now he's going to barely play for the Braves, in all likelihood. And we might have the same situation where it like takes him a while to like settle back in, and then it's just a lost season.
Dude,
what contract is he getting next year?
I'm just imagining Alex Anthopoulos, Atlanta's top exec, president of baseball operations, getting the phone call.
Oh, brutal. I mean, at least they had, that's tough. That's tough. They had already traded for Mauricio Dubon. They just signed Jorge Mateo. Those will be the shortstops for them, I guess. But yeah, that's not a great.
I need to know more details. Maybe I'm being too picky here, but like,
And maybe it's his business.
I think we'll probably get them. It will be in Korean and translated.
Were you going downstairs?
Yeah.
Was it late at night? Were you out on the town?
When he gets the spring training, there will be some questions asked. Because this is a pretty big deal.
This is a $20 million mistake. That's some of the most expensive
ice. He's getting
the
money. Baseball,
I know,
baby,
but I'm saying for the Braves.
Yeah.
Oh.
This is more bad than Ugla, but definitely Ugla. All right. My Ugla was bad, but now might be good, which is why it's Ugla. And that is the Marlins of Miami trading for Bradley Blaylock. Bradley Blaylock was a pitcher who truly captivated me in 2025. Because he was, perhaps now as we move into this new era of Colorado Rockies baseball, was one of the last pitchers that was just thrown out there in Coors to die. He had a 9.36 ERA this past year in 58 and two-thirds innings. All right?
Wow.
That's a lot of innings to have a really bad ERA. If you're wondering, courtesy of Stathead, that is the 10th highest ERA ever for a pitcher with at least 50 innings pitched in the major leagues. Do you know who the record holder is for the highest ERA with at least 50 innings pitched in a major league season?
I'm going to guess it was someone on the 2019 Baltimore Orioles, though.
No, but I am very curious to go look at who made a push at that. 50 innings is a lot of innings. The answer
it's is probably Hall of a Famer. Rocky.
No, it's Hall of Famer Roy Halladay. In 2000, with the Toronto Blue Jays, which is amazing. 10.64 ERA in 67 innings. Anyway, back to Bradley Blaylock. Part of why Bradley Blaylock is so important to me is because he was slightly better on the road. Still very bad, but slightly better on the road, including on July 28th, he came to Cleveland and pitched the game of his life. This was the day after Emmanuel Clase was taken away by the authorities, sort of. This was right before the trade deadline. This is when the Guardian season is completely spiraling. And Bradley Blaylock showed up with his 9 ERA and threw 6 scoreless innings. And it was amazing. And he was pounding the glove and he was just dicing him up. And at that point, I said, the Guardians are cooked. Bradley Blaylock is making them look silly. This offense is a joke. Bradley Blaylock then proceeded to get crushed for the rest of the season. But now he has been freed. He has been traded to the Marlins. And while I'm not expecting him to suddenly become a number 2 starter, I am excited for him to have a new lease on Major League life and hopefully become a useful major leaguer away from Colorado. And I wish Bradley Blaylock the best. He's someone I will be heavily invested in whenever he takes the major league mound in 2026. Ugla. Bradley Blaylock, by the way, if you're wondering how your ERA gets that high, how about you start the game that they lose 21-0?
Ah, that'll do it.
He gave up 12 in that one, so that's going to hurt. And he did not ever recover from that. Bradley Blaylock, we wish you the best. That is it for this Thursday edition of Baseball Barbercast. We will not be back tomorrow because we moved this pod up and we got all this big news. Unless, I guess, I don't know, Skeens gets traded. Otherwise, any final thoughts, Shakemans, before we say goodbye?
On last episode, we talked much too much about Cody Poteet's wife's Madeline working at a company that ships cars for baseball people. I received a text overnight from someone who works in ball. Quote, I am a satisfied customer of Madeline Poteet's Getaway Day Agency. So I got all the details on the business.
Oh, let's go.
So it's mostly baseball wives working. It's like 1,300 to ship each way.
Poteet gang. That fires me up. That's awesome. Yeah. All right. Well, shouts out to the Poteets. I'll tell you who it is when we're done. Shouts out to producer Andrew Hartz for making this show possible. We appreciate it as always. We hope everyone enjoyed this early edition of Baseball Barbercast. Relatively, don't have to wait till Friday. We'll be back next week. Stay warm, everybody, if you are in the cold parts of the country. Goodbye.
Go Sabres.
Christmas.